Hey everybody, now welcome to the first instant reaction of the full Dark Matter record. We are sitting here on Zoom right now with some of our favorite people in the Pearl Jam podcast community, and we're going to have a nice little roundtable discussion about this record, about what we heard. Everybody will have their thoughts and opinions coming from the film and coming from what they're hearing now that the record is out. So I say, let's just jump right in here. Now, I feel like I've said a lot about the record so far, and after listening to it a couple times, I don't have too much new to say, although listening into headphones is a much better experience than listening to it in a record store or at a film or something like that. And now I'm able to hear things that I wasn't able to hear before. And I think that songs that I might not have gotten at first, like Won't Tell and Got to Give, were the two. I think I have a better understanding for what those songs are now. And while I'm not like up to speed and not necessarily feeling them like I feel the rest of the record, I get it. I get their presence. But overall, I've been very impressed. Very impressed. Upper Hand has still captivated me from each step of the way. Scared of Fear is probably my second favorite song. And then following that, like Wreckage is really moving up my list. I really, really dig Wreckage now. React Respond is pretty good. It's got a lot for everybody on this. So, like I said, I've shared a lot so far, and I kind of want to be able to mediate and ask questions where, you know, necessary. So I'm just going to open the floor to anybody that wants to start. John's here. So if John, you have anything to piggyback off of that?
I'm just looking forward to, like you said, just listening to it on headphones and just like sitting with it and like digesting the lyrics and getting into more of like the bigger themes and the bigger picture of it. Cause, you know, hearing it in the theater a couple of times is cool and you get the visuals and the lyrics there. But there's nothing like, you know, putting it in your car, or putting it in your headphones and you're walking around, and that's when you really get to like digest it. And I think, you know, it's the back half for me is the one I need to spend some more time with, like starting with Waiting for Stevie. And then I think this is going to be one where the back half is going to really age really well, aside from Running.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, the back half is definitely something I agree that needs a little bit more time to marinate, because I've been saying it, that 5, 6, 7 right there, Won't Tell to Upper Hand to Waiting for Stevie, that is, you need a break for a cigarette after that. Like, that is heavy, heavy, heavy stuff right there. So, open floor. Anybody can start talking, start the conversation up. Anybody can react and respond, or don't react, respond. And we'll just kind of get this thing going here. So anybody want to start out? I'm glad we have a lot of participation so far, you guys. This is fantastic. I'm so glad that we did this.
So Randy, I'll jump in. I think the thing that surprised me the most today was just given the style of some of the songs, you know, the general, like, you know, a couple of them, some of those preview chords we heard on like the basketball clip and stuff like that, you know, had some kind of country strumming vibes. And, you know, we'd heard some rumors in years past of like, oh, they wrote a country song and stuff like that. And then Dark Matter had come out, and then Running had come out. And it's like, well, we can map Running directly to a couple other songs, right? It's very Mind Your Manners, Getaway kind of vibe, right? Dark Matter, I mean, I think that's a force to be reckoned with. But just like overall, across the last couple of weeks, and then especially the last couple of days, as more and more people heard the entirety of the album, I've seen so much positive reaction to this album juxtaposed against so much negativity against the first two singles that surprised me, because Running didn't grab me right away, but I've grown to like it a lot. Dark Matter had me from the second chord. I think that's just been the biggest surprise to me in a very pleasant way. I'm like, oh my God, you know, I think Gigaton was probably loved by the hardcore, but, you know, much more lukewarm as you went into the more casual people. I feel like this album is just being received very well from the get-go, and that's really exciting.
Yeah, to follow up on that, it's funny because you mentioned Gigaton, and I do remember that right after Gigaton came out, that it did have a pretty positive reception. And I think a lot of that had to do with sort of the uncertainty of COVID and like the future kind of being pretty bleak. And that was something fresh that we had. And that was, we didn't have any shows that were upcoming. So that was all we kind of had to grab onto at the time. And then it kind of, once you spent some time with it, you saw some people that were like, okay, maybe this doesn't have this. Maybe I don't really like this song. Maybe this. But you're right. Right now, I haven't heard a lot of people share anything negative about the record. And I think, honestly, for the past four Pearl Jam records, I'm going to go to everything from Backspacer on. It has something for everybody.
Yep.
Everybody has a specific kind of genre of Pearl Jam that they like. Some like punk Pearl Jam, some like the soaring Pearl Jam, some like, you know, the poppy, heartfelt Pearl Jam. And this pretty much fills in that template right there of being kind of all over the map. And whether or not somebody doesn't like running because it's a little too fast for them, they'll like something like Waiting for Stevie that has more of a build and more of an ascension. Yeah. Javier, let's get you in on this because I always like to call out your name. And you're muted, so.
Well, now you're saying it right. I don't know, man. Like, and I want to jump into with Jason in this one. I think Jason and I were very, very vocal about how excited we were to get Andy Watt on this. And I just dig the album. I just dig how melodic it is. It's, I think the guy just, the more interviews that I read, it's just like I can picture him jumping with a PJ t-shirt all over the room, like pushing Matt Cameron to play louder and louder and louder and louder. And I think that's so exciting to me. And I think it's very well made. Clearly, whatever they used is something that they didn't do before, or in the like equipment wise and all that stuff. But also, I really love how layered it is. Like if you get into your headphones, you listen to so many different details, so many different arrangements, and I think it shines. I think every song has a little catch and a hook, you know, like each song can shine by itself. And my favorite thing so far is the flow of the album. I think Scare of Fear, React Response, then you get a little breather with Wreckage, and then they grab you by the throat again with Dark Matter, and they continue to jump in, and that transition in between 5, 6, and 7. And I think a sleeper for this album for me is it's Won't Tell. It's 4, right?
No. Won't Tell's right after Dark Matter.
Yeah. The tone of that song is just like, oh, exquisite to me. It's just so well made. But I'm just so happy. I just cannot wait to hear them live, and I'm like, it's super exciting as a fan to see that they have had so many positive reviews already, and people are getting hyped. I mean, a coworker that barely hears them this morning told me, and I think I told you the story, Randy. He's like,
yeah,
oh yeah, like I heard that they got a new album coming out, and I am reading a lot of hype about that, and I'm like, it's exciting, and I just like it. I think Andrew Watt was the right choice. I think he was the right guy to get them going, and just not to be waiting for everybody to deliver their babies and their songs and just making, you know, like a recording by themselves and then just getting everything together and getting an album every 6 to 7 years. I think that was the right move for sure.
Let's talk to you about the Dumble a little bit later. I want to still get some other voices in here. We can go to Jason, we can go to Tom, we can go to Mar, anybody.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Javi. You know, was super excited to know that Andy Watt was producing this record because, you know, he's kind of like speaking, you know, as a fan, just like all of us. You know, he got to do what probably every Pearl Jam fan would love to do, and that's to get in a room with those guys and channel each of them individually. you know, so that then they can just do what they've always done. You know, and I think Andy just kind of he got them firing on all cylinders. You know, he got Ed sounding great right in his wheelhouse with the way he sings on this record. Mike, can't wait to see him on tour. I don't think he's going to stand still for a split second. You know, and same with Matt. I mean, he's got those drums sounding so fucking good, and they're already fucking good. I'm not surprised that this record is so far well received, and I think it's only going to get better because it's a very complete record from start to finish.
Is there anybody here that had, and Mike wants to talk, but I'll ask a question first. Is there anybody here that had serious trepidations about Watt producing this record and whether or not, okay, well, go ahead, Mike. And whether or not that exceeded your expectation or kind of kept, you know, I don't really like his style at all.
Yeah. So I was majorly concerned about it ahead of time because, I was not a fan of Earthling. I didn't like the mix. I didn't like the sound. There was really of everything that Ed has ever done, it was my least favorite output. So I had a lot of concerns going into the album. I think he did a great job with rallying the troops, getting them together, kind of herding the cats, you know, keeping everybody focused. And I think he definitely contributed in that way in a very, very positive way. I think it's maybe the most musically interesting album they've put out in many, many years. Probably the most musically interesting album they put out since Binaural. However, on the side, I can't stand the mix. It's like I feel like he was great at organizing and pushing them and getting everything together. But when it came to actually mixing the album, like I'm looking forward in 20 years to getting the Brendan O'Brien remix and listening to it. I just think it's too loud and it makes it difficult to appreciate all the nuance. It's like everything is just loud, loud, loud. But I mean, like, it's just my opinion.
Yeah, I think I had some kind of questions about that at first as well. And I really, after hearing Dark Matter and Running for the singles wise, I thought that we were going to hear less of Ed on this record, that the vocal tracks felt like they were being pushed back. But that's essentially what happens when the record got, or the singles got digitized, is that you weren't hearing much of Ed out in front. And when the movie came in and when you listen to it now, you can hear those vocals just fine. Like there's no issue with anything at all. You hear Ed pretty crystal clear. So yeah,
I wonder how much of that is all of the different mixes and different modalities to listen to it. Because I've definitely noticed with Gigaton, from the vehicle that I had when Gigaton came out into the next vehicle that I was in, and with tweaking my Atmos setup in my living room and listening on headphones, there's times where it sounds... I actually went back at one point and was thinking that somehow Apple had dropped a different mix into Apple Music of Gigaton, because the vocal level was so different.
Interesting.
So I think Aaron is right.
Yeah. In the version that it got leaked, when you listen to the album, I mean, the album is loud. In every single interview, like, Mike completely nails it, I think. I mean, the intention of this is we're getting those guys with extremely loud amps and get the best take that you can get. So, yeah, it's loud. But I think, going back to Aaron, too, I think whenever we get the Atmos mix, I think we're going to be able to listen to different little nuances even more. But like, for example, like I was wondering about that and I threw it into a software that I have, and you can see like the signal is spiking all over the place. Like it's freaking loud, super loud. So
why don't we talk about some songs here and some of the most impactful songs, and I can play some and just kind of play some clips. I won't play everything, like I said. You know, the record will be out there for years and years and years for us to digest and love. The song to me is Upper Hand, to talk about that sonically. You can hear so much going on in it.
Yeah.
That it just takes you into an interesting place, because I mentioned about the lyrics too. I can't stop thinking or talking about this, that the lyrics to the song and the way that the song develops, especially its intro, how it just eases in, feels like kind of like a funeral procession. And when it all develops and when you hear Ed's vocals come in with that echo effect, it doesn't feel like he's necessarily on the same plane as the rest of the band, in a good way, in a very good way, because the mix is made to make it feel almost as if Ed is watching something unravel. And I see it as it's somebody deceased rattling off his regrets while watching his funeral in front of it. Well, I see the conversation here, and there's a lot of juicy stuff to get into. I want to start by saying this. I remember one of the singles coming out and there being a conversation on Twitter in one of these threads that I started, and somebody commented, I must have, you know, said, hey, this reminds me of this. And this person that commented was like, why does everybody have to mention what things remind? Why can't you just listen to the song and just appreciate that for what it is? And I kind of responded back and I was like, you know, if people are recognizing other influences within the song, that's not a knock on the song at all. That is just showing what, like having a reminder of another song and how that has kind of hit you, and having the same song hit you in the same kind of way, that's important. That's like an important facet for music to do. It's not necessarily saying, oh, well, this is this song and it's not an original function. It's taking little pieces of what you know and putting it out there and putting it together, and having that familiarity makes you fall in love with songs even more. That's why sometimes it can be difficult when you don't listen to a genre and you listen to something and said, I can't get into this, because you can't, you're not getting a reminder of anything, you know, whether it be something like a soft indie band or something like that. Like, there's nothing to compare it to. And in these comments that I'm seeing here, I'm seeing a lot of people say Avocado songs, Pink Floyd, Bruce. There's a lot to digest within just this song. So, floor is open. I want to get to maybe, because I hear a lot of Nothing As It Seems in the verses, and just the way it kind of feels a little bit ethereal there, and it feels like Ed's vocals are sort of floating. I hear a little bit of that. Anybody want to piggyback off that since that was mentioned?
Hey, Randy, I hear a bit of Parachutes with that acoustic sound in the beginning.
Okay.
I don't know if it's any of that. And also, you mentioned Avocado for one of the outtakes, Cold Confession. I could kind of hear that echoey with the vocals, that effect. I could definitely feel that being in there.
Yeah. Javier, you said come back. To my mind, the ending, once Matt starts to push at the ending and you kind of feel that thump and it starts to elevate, that to me is like lightning bolt and marker in the sand had a baby to me. I feel a lot of that ending, a marker in the sand, where it picks up a little bit. And then lightning bolt is just that like positive electric kind of, you know, Mike just sort of going off into the distance sort of vibe that lightning bolt has.
I agree with that. The last part, though, it really reminds me of like the live, like a live take of Comeback, where he starts to get like on that. And that's what I was telling you, like Better Man meets Comeback at the end. But I can see your point, too. For me, the intro is just like perfect walking to stage song. Perfect. Do that on this tour. Use it and just like get it on the loop till you get the guys on the stage. That will be freaking amazing. Mm-hmm. And in the Spin interview, Andy Watt kind of like spilled the beans, whatever that they were kind of using to. And I was wondering, like, well, now the Atmos version is released. I really want to dig into that and I want to see like what else is in there, because that intro is so well built up.
Yeah.
And I think it was Ned or Mike that it was saying that, like, over the chat, like, they have never done something like that before, ever. Like, this is a complete new thing, and that's cool, man. But also, when I'm picturing this live, intro song.
Mm-hmm.
Intro song to the stage.
Yeah. I can see that.
That's one of the first things I thought of, too. I thought this was this album's pendulum. Like, the intro.
Yeah.
And maybe. Just how you could see just, you know, the lights kind of going down and then just, you know, this like, you know, kind of light rising from the stage and the guys walking on one at a time as the, you know, the synthesizer music is going on in the background and everything. And I thought it would just be an incredible intro song. And just kind of the way that it ends, too, it just kind of leads to what would be the rest of the show. And, you know, I absolutely of the songs on the album, it's the one that stood out. This is the one that's going to be the intro song for sure.
I can see Josh playing that too as they coming out first, and then just strumming that intro as they come out.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can I suggest that maybe after like the even flow spot, what happens if like the whole stage just goes dark and kind of like maybe some band members leave the stage or something like that, and you just kind of hear that sort of seep through, and that kind of gets you into the second half of the main set right there. What do you think about that?
I think that's a great suggestion. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty intrigued to see how this is going to pan out. I don't know if you guys read the article about RSD that Mike, I think it was Manigold Records or something like that. He just confirmed that they're going to have screens. He told in the screen, like, in the interview, we're going to have screens. I wonder what kind of support is going to be with the song. I can also think, and I can also see that this is the kind of song that it will need the arrangement with Ed playing with them. So everybody's going to be playing in this song because it's so complex. It has so many things in the back that you're going to see Josh playing, Ed playing, and everybody doing something different to create that freaky atmosphere that the song has.
It's interesting that you brought up Ed playing, because I had asked somebody that would know this answer. And I think
the answer is no.
Yeah, I don't think he played any guitar on this record.
Yeah, you can listen to that, and the way like that super staccato strumming is not present. Mm-hmm. But right. I think this is the song that he's going to be part of that wreckage, maybe, but this in maybe setting song. Yeah, I can see him doing rearrangements with the entire band too.
Sure.
So Randy, that idea you had might answer my question, which is, what do we think about the 3-4 song acoustic sit down start this year? How is that going to look potentially or not? Because that, I've been thinking intro song with this, we've had some people talking about it, but it kind of doesn't fit in with that motif, right? But if it's, oh, we're going to do what we were doing, go dark and then play, oh, that'd be amazing.
Aaron, here's the thing. I don't think any of these 11 songs fit in within the sit down section.
True.
No,
and they're going to want to come out right away with Dark Matter, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think he'll probably try to shoehorn a couple of them in there sometimes. I can see him doing like something special in the 3 slot.
Yeah, Setting Sun could work there, even Wreckage if you wanted to make it work, but you're not going to do React Respond, or you're not going to do Waiting for Stevie there. That's just, it's impossible to even attempt, like with something like Retrograde being that Kick Down the Chair song. I think these all just need to just be played and not be worried about like position wise and how it's gonna, yes, you worry about how it's gonna flow into the next, but
or like you said, they move the sit down section to the middle or to the encore again.
I would love that.
Be amazing.
Yeah.
And also remember, guys, these guys, they don't rehearse. They don't. So
it's true.
This is the other thing. I think the first couple of shows, we're going to get probably a few that they're very comfortable with. But as long as the tour, they start to get a little bit more tied up, now we're going to get the weird stuff. Now, I think now was maybe just for a comfort zone thing, which, I mean, I don't think, or it might happen, I don't know. Maybe we're going to start with something that we all know, like it's a down section. But once the arrangements are really, really sitting down and everybody's comfortable with the role that they have to play in the new tracks, we're going to start to see, like John said, maybe that sit down section is going to be the first encore, and then we're going to get React Respond, the first track, and let's go, you know?
So go back to this no rehearsing thing, because I thought that they had been in like Pittsburgh for a week before the tour that started there a few years ago. And Ed specifically said before San Diego 22, they've been in town for almost 2 weeks practicing.
Yeah. Yeah. They usually do that. They don't go in into the headquarters. They just, you know what I mean? It's not like the other band that they like sit for a month.
Yeah. And they don't study. They cram.
Yeah. Here's what they really do. They practice a bunch of songs. And then on the day of the first and second show, they're like, all right, let's do a bunch of songs that we didn't rehearse.
Right.
That's what they do.
Yeah. And actually in the interview, Mike was saying that they're going to get together with Josh Stone first to figure out who's going to play what part of the record. And then they're going to meet up with the rest of the band when they start the tour. So they haven't even decided who is doing what.
Josh's role is definitely elevated in this. That's
absolutely, because the complexity of the layers and all the like the little nuances and the reverb and the chorus play, for example, the effect that is on Waiting on Stevie. It's like super, super cool. Like, who's going to be doing that? I can see Mike doing that more than Stone for some reason, but.
Well, that's what jumped in my head when you guys were saying that, or I think Randy, you said that you got that info that Ed didn't actually play on the album. So I'm wondering, okay, so did Watt play on the album?
I didn't get that per se. I got an answer of don't know if he played anything.
Gotcha.
So that to me.
Like, let's say he didn't do much and it was like, what? Well, then is he taking his parts? And yeah, that's.
Well, also something that I had heard, that a lot of Watt's stuff that he wrote got cut from the record, because what he was doing within that stuff was he was using it to kind of allow McCready to segue, or using it to push Stone or something like that. It was kind of used as reinforcements more than like, listen to my lick or something.
Yeah, mostly he played in each one of the songs, but in the final take, it was taken out.
That's awesome.
Anybody else want to comment on cool Upper process. Hand? Mike?
Yeah. It's.
Go ahead, Eddie. You haven't talked yet.
I'm sorry. Sorry to interrupt. But it's funny how everybody's so different, but yet everybody's talked about the same thing. Like, I mentioned like the back half of Avocado and the notes I took, but yeah, I thought intro song. This is. Lights go dark, that beginning starts, lights rise up slowly, and then it builds and builds, and then the band comes on. Someone mentioned that the beginning was something that's like brand new, and I totally agree. I think the closest thing you could get is like those 2006 versions of Severed Hand, when the intro would repeat, and it would repeat until they came up. I slowly climbing to be maybe my favorite from the record, but I definitely hear like Love Boat Captain in the beginning, like once that like organ comes in and it like
those diminished chords and the minors, right, and all that. Yeah. You can hear that. Yeah.
And then obviously the build, present tense, and then like the back half of present tense, and then the back half of Inside Job. But yeah, it's gonna be kick ass live. So I'm excited.
Yeah. At first I wasn't hearing the present tense in that, but then like that whole part, like the way that he's singing sort of the chorus run, and he finishes like, I never had the upper hand. That's, you know, makes much more sense to live in the present tense. Very, very similar to that. Yep. Mike, Mar, I see Mar's open. Mike.
Yeah. So a couple of questions real quick. When you guys were talking about the intro,
next, Mar.
I could totally see that being the intro of Scared of Fear. And they're just using that the same way they use the, orchestral Baba for a while on the tour, where that would play and they would come out. I could totally see them using the intro from Scared of Fear for that. That doesn't mean they're going to necessarily go into the song, but I could see them using that kind of as the band walks onto the stage moment.
Yeah.
People talked a long time ago when Yield came out about Given a Fly and how it was going to California, and it became a big thing in the news, and nobody talks about that anymore. They treat it as its own song, and I think that even though Upper Hand has a lot of Floyd in it, I mean, the chord progression at certain points is exactly the same as Time, to the point where the first time I heard it, I was ready to say, ticking away the moment all day. I was like ready for that, and then it changed. But I don't think that in the future. I think it's just when it's new, people will associate it with something and they'll talk about it, but it'll be like Given a Fly in a few years.
Mar, what do you got?
So when we were talking about, like, you know, intros to a song that kind of sounds, you know, like this one, like, how come we're not talking about Once? You know, like, okay. Once, like, you know, has an intro before it really starts. Hmm. You know, it's kind of like that sort of spaciness to it.
That's true.
But Better Man, same the thing. Other thing, yeah, you know, it's just not as long as this one. I think, like, just how the length of this and the build up, because you're like, you know, when I first heard it in the record store, I was like, yeah, like everybody, I was like, okay, yeah, you know, definitely Pink Floyd. But my brain also kept going back to Muse. Like, it's just, like, I keep thinking about Knights of Sidonia. And, like, I don't know why that just, like, keeps building up in my brain. But, I mean, I love that song, too. But, it is, like, what we were saying earlier, like, so hard not to listen to anything and be reminded. We're old now. We're going to be, like, reminded of a lot of stuff. So our points of references are plenty. So with this one, I mean, but that being said, with this record so far, I feel like it really sounds like just like an amalgamation of their entire career, everything they've ever done. But it also sounds like still really fresh about it. Like, I love that I could like think of different albums from their entire career when I hear this. Like, it just feels like who they are and always been.
I've been thinking about this as their Fear Inoculum, the exact same thing.
Yeah, like including that range.
Well, all right. I think we dug in the upper hand pretty well here. So the ones I really wanted to highlight were the ones that I've heard the most people talk about. And of course, as mentioning the 5-6-7 on this record, Waiting for Stevie is probably the one that I'm hearing maybe the most people talk about, because there's lots of different influences in that. And then you have sort of that build up to the end and how Mike goes off and Cameron goes off. And there's that 20 seconds at the end there that's going to absolutely obliterate live. And yeah, it's going to be pretty amazing. So I think the biggest takeaway to look at here is that there are a lot of references to other 90s bands and other 90s music. A lot of Soundgarden. I think that was one of the first things I heard too, just like that kind of, yeah, that tone felt Soundgarden-ish, which in turn also, because it's a huge influence on them, felt very Zeppelin-ish. I thought about Thank You the first time that I had heard that, and I think that intro kind of gives that vibe, even though it's not really close to the same thing. It's just the same tone, same intonation with that. How's everybody else? Because I think this is one that we could spend some time on here. So what is everybody else thinking?
This song is going to be huge for them.
Yeah,
absolutely huge. It's going to take off and just keep going.
They've got to play it every night.
Yeah.
I think they're going to want to play it every night.
Yeah. It's like right in your wheelhouse. Like all of them.
So I love Gigaton. And then today I was realizing, I'm like, I love this song more than anything on Gigaton at all, which I know some people will be like, you know, of course Gigaton sucks, but I love Gigaton. But this, I love the song within that album for sure.
And guys, that jam at the end, that can stretch. That can be stretched for a very long time. Although, I know, kick me out if I deserve this after the comment that I'm going to make right now. I feel that this might be the song that is going to be dropped down half step.
Okay, probably. Why is that?
I can see that.
Just because the vocals or something else?
He's pretty high range.
Yeah, this song is on D. I don't know if it's... My theory is that the guitar is in drop D because of the riff. But it might be the song that it could be, depending on where in the set is going to be placed. If it's at the beginning, we're going to get it as it is. Probably it's in the back half, it might be dropped down.
Okay.
But I still think it's going to sound amazing. I still think that they're going to jam at the end. And that effect at the beginning, I think, is something related with the modulation chorus. Like, I don't know if you guys knew, but like, even though that I'm giving Aaron crap about Oasis, like, I love Oasis. I think it's a great band. I'm sorry if I get hatred from people here for saying that. I love that band. And they have so many songs that they're similar to that, with that kind of like sound, like the Stone Roses, the Jesus and the Mary Chain, like Slow Dive, all that shoegaze sound from the 90s from England. And when I hear that riff, I'm like, that my teenage heart immediately went to that, but also like a lot of like Green River, Mother Love Bone, like Soundgarden.
The Cult.
A lot of that kind of like B-side bands that were not very well known, but that they're a huge influence on everything and everyone. You like to admit it or not, but yeah, I this song is, like Jason said, this song is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. It's going to be ended up 15 minutes and Mike is going to be soloing while everybody's going to be eating a sandwich, and that's okay.
Yeah, I feel like this is definitely the one that, like, once we hear it, like, get played 5 or 6 times live, and those clearly Mike riffs towards the end, and he just starts playing those so much bigger than they are on the album, you're going to come back to the album version and just be like, I'm bored. I'm used to this other version now. Like, Retrograde is like that for me now. I can't listen to the Gigaton Retrograde. I have to go to a live version.
Sure.
Right.
Fair.
And he's going to be so comfortable with that too, because it's the same key and even flow. He can go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so comfortable for him. Like, he can go and go and go. And yeah. Yeah.
So this plays, then even flow plays? Like, that's going to, like, we know even flow's coming on the shows.
Ooh, see, could be. I have another suggestion for this that might be a little bit out of this world. What if this went into a live?
Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm going to say about it.
What'd you say, Tom?
Oh, I thought you were going to say maybe a set closer, maybe in another tour once it gets more familiar to people.
But yeah, I don't think it's a set closer, but I think the setup to a live, and granted, that's a real. Yeah, Porch is probably the better one, but something that you feel that state of euphoria at the end, and then it takes you into something a lot more familiar where you just explode and are able to rock out again.
Right. Because I mean, hearing this at a ballpark, like, it feels like a very outdoors song, because it just has this openness to it. It sounds like I can't wait for it.
Yeah.
It's like the guitars are riding a wave and it just goes, you know, just goes and everybody plays along with it.
Right. And Ed doesn't really do too much outside of the chorus either. It's pretty repetitive. It's on my fingertips here on what that part reminds me of just like having a chorus begin the song and then continuing to just use that as the build into that. It's reminding me of something. I'm not picking up on it right now, but it's been done before. But that's a pretty crafty way to do that. I want to ask people about the transition here, because I thought the transition, the more and more I hear it, the more I love it. And I realized a little while ago before jumping in that this is Goodbye Blue Sky. If you want to talk about Pink Floyd, this is Goodbye Blue Sky plus Where the Streets Have No Name. You could hear Where the Streets Have No Name in that ding, 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 and you hear that little dun, 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 dun. You hear both of them put together. I wonder if that's part of the influence with that.
I think Where the Streets Have No Name is the influence on several things on this album. John mentioned earlier that it was, you know, intro to the earlier song, somebody shouted that out in the theater I was at. They started singing Where the Streets Have No Name, and got a bit of laughter. Just, you know, I don't know. He was clearly spending quite a bit of time with Bono and Sun over the past year or so. I think Sphere probably influences his visual. And, you know, this song just embodies the whole album. Like, we're able to map Pearl Jam's history through all of these songs, but also, like, so many of their outside influences with each and every one of them. I think this song embodies it, but it's true with pretty much the whole album. And I was really happy.
And actually, just piggyback on what Ned said, there was an article this morning. Jeff, I think it was talking to Guitar World or Vintage Guitar or something like that. And he mentions Adam Clayton of U2 being a huge influence on him.
Makes sense.
And in a lot of interviews, they have been saying, like, Stone said the same thing, that basically Jeff is the guy that it brings a new band to the band, saying, like, hey, listen, this. He's the one who discovered Deep Sea Diver. You know? So I think it might be something like Ned said, it might be something that maybe he was channeling more sounds towards that, and he was the one driving that song to be pushed in that direction. Could be.
Anything else anybody wants to add on Stevie? And I have a direction that I want to go afterwards. So last call for Stevie here.
You think there's any doubt that that's the last song from this album that gets played on every show? Like, I can't see them playing any of the other new material after it.
You might have a good point. Maybe mm-hmm. Running is in the same kind of spot that Comatose was in when the Avocado tour was happening, because Comatose was used in the encore a lot as kind of that bridge from slower buildup, like a small town, to Comatose, to sort of something a little bit grander, like a Spin the Black Circle or something like that.
Right.
So that, you mentioned Running. Is that the song that least belongs on this album?
I think they all have a place. I don't think that's fair to say.
But if you had to pick one, like, what's the one that doesn't quite click in?
Right.
Something special. I'm thinking about
something
that.
Something special, probably, yeah, but I still like it on here.
No, I would say React Respond.
Really?
I personally,
it just feels, I love it. It kind of feels just a little different than the others.
See, and that's where, like, I disagree with what Javi said earlier, because so far, I think this is the single most resequenceable Pearl Jam album ever. I could remix this five different ways and like it all better
instead
than this.
Instead of Binaural, really?
I don't think
about Binaural that much. I'd have to go like listen to Binaural in order again, because like I have a playlist
like your brain, of like four.
Well, but Binaural and Riot Act and Avocado, I have a playlist of like the 3/4 of the songs from each one of those albums I like. It's just like a private mix. I don't listen to them in order very often. I can't even
don't be sleeping
on I couldn't name Binaural in order for $1 million, dude.
Don't be sleeping on Riot Act now.
Don't I said okay. I thought you were about to say don't be sleeping on Rival. I'm like, wait.
No, Riot Act. Come on,
Riot Act. Don't be sleeping on Riot Act. Don't be sleeping on Rival either. That's
and Aaron was saying something about Running. I can definitely see Running if we're gonna get that slow start. I can definitely see Running right behind something like Nothing Man, for example.
Yeah,
sure. Hmm.
Will Running take the place of Luke in most nights? Running could into be. Not for you, no. Running into great. No,
I've been thinking more like, does it take the place of Mind Your Manners?
Yes, I hope so.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, literally, from like Ed obviously loves Mind Your Manners more than any man should, but like
maybe Jell Biafra likes it, who knows?
Or you can get Running right next to what is the other song that is the same key? Supersonic. Back-to-back combos. They're the same thing.
See, now you're assuming that they're playing a Riot Act song, not or a Backspacer song not named Unthought Known, which is a rarity. So,
I'm for it because that's the last one I need from that record, so I'm good.
I think they're not going to play Running as much as everything else. I don't think it's going to translate well live. I think it's too wordy for him to pull off.
It's kind of why I mentioned Lucan, because, it can get off the rails a little bit.
Yeah.
We just need to get potato posters, and we're good.
Yes. Okay. So this is going out to the universe, guys. If you are in GA and you plan to wait for Rail, please, I will personally pay for. Oh, Aaron, what are you doing? I believe we're about to see a potato in the chat here. I will pay to get poster board made up so that you can have potato poster to hold up when they do that song, when they do the Dictator Love Hater potato. I want Ed to see that fucking potato on this tour, and I'm not stopping until he does.
Done. I got you,
Jason. My man. All right, you guys,
and potato t-shirts.
But we'll see.
I just found a potato flag so you could roll it up in your pocket.
Mr. Potato Head, Mike used to have.
Oh, Mr. Potato Head. Yeah, he might take a look there. Yeah.
Hey, that one guy threw a severed hand on the stage. Can we throw a potato head on the stage?
I have one. I'll steal it from my son.
Oh my gosh.
Hey, like, speaking of shirts, I'm going to use this for a little bit of self-promotion right now for anybody that's listening at home or anybody in this chat right now. We have the brand new In All of This Dark Matter shirt that I'm holding up here. You can go to our website, liveonfourlegs.com. It's right on the homepage. You can purchase it. And I'm supposed to get a shipment in very, very soon, earlier than I had expected to. So it's a $25 shirt. And once I get that box in, which I think the next couple of days it'll be here, then I'm going to start shipping these guys out. So if you're going to Vancouver and want to start representing, then get an order in as soon as you can. And I'm going to bust through these. So we have a lot and we've gotten some sales so far, but anything that you need at this point, we're going to have. So liveonfourlegs.com to get the In All of This Dark Matter Live on Four Legs shirt.
You okay. Can order, and now you get in a special version with two potatoes in the back.
God damn it. It costs more, but damn it, it's worth it. Okay, so I think the next point of discussion song-wise here, a lot of people have been talking about the 1-2 combo right at the top. Scared of Fear, Into React, Respond. Scared of Fear fits right in with that pantheon of openers. It just has that tone that kind of sets it for the record and feels like you're part of the Pearl Jam, you know, experience right away. And then React Respond is both reacting and responding to that in a fairly, you know, energetic and fun way.
I can see Mike trashing a guitar after this.
Yeah, pretty much. He's Do you see this being good. Go Animal? Is this Go Animal here, where we have to hear him back to back every night?
Could be, yeah.
Maybe for this tour, anyway. Yeah, makes sense.
I can see them pairing Running with React Respond either before or after.
I was thinking that too.
Possibly, sure. That juicy riff in Scared of Fear. I love Upper Hand, but that might be my favorite thing on the record. It brings you in right away. I get images with Pearl Jam songs a lot. And that one is like, I almost get this sense of you're about to go on the road and the images that flash in your head are kind of old photos and like almost like a photo album of their history and posters and like you see it all kind of flash before your eyes, almost kind of, I guess, in like a nostalgic memory sequence sort of way. And then like, it's very driving. It has that very driving tone and pace to it. And like, I just kind of see it as sort of a road trip, kind of friends getting together sort of song. And like, yeah, everything in between.
I think React Respond has the highest potential on this album to be this album's getaway.
Okay.
Meaning it could fall on its face live and they ditch it.
Mm.
It's just out there enough. They may just go, yep, we don't like how this is working and goodbye. That's the one that makes me think that the most.
I don't necessarily disagree with you because I think that that riff and how perfect it sounds in its form for the record is going to be extremely difficult to replicate in the same way, because I think that there's like an extra strumming in there that feels, I don't know, and Javier, you can attest to this, like what, when Getaway didn't work live, it was because it didn't have that like extra, like the, when you hear it on the record, it went dun 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 dun, and when you hear it live, it went dun 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 dun, and it became a little bit too more open in order to translate. I can see the way that Aaron is saying that with that intro, that maybe it's a little too, he might translate that to be a little bit too open.
Yeah. I totally get Aaron's point, because Getaway was probably one of my biggest disappointments. They could never nail it live. I think, I mean, that song Half Step Down doesn't sound quite right to start with, although they didn't have Josh Klinghoffer, and Josh is going to play a critical role, I think, in this kind of song, because
I want to hear Getaway.
Yeah. I remember that one of the main reasons why they wanted to bring somebody else for the Gigaton tour, it was to recreate all the details that those songs had, right? So I think right now, I think Aaron is quite right. When if it doesn't work right away, they might push it on the side for a little bit to work it out. But that riff is made for Stone. It's just he's going to drive that song. It's Stone and Jeff, they're going to drive that to home. And all the little things on the side is going to be Josh and Mike. Mm-hmm. Because actually, if you really listen to the mix, I mean, I'm assuming that a Stone is doing the right? But the other guitarist, then, nothing else. So, and then there's a lot of like more bluesy parts in the back, but I think that's where Josh is going to jump in. And I think they can make it work quite well. And if it works, that's going to be one of the ones that is going to like sit on your ass once it's done right.
So you were just talking about React Respond?
Yeah.
Okay, because I was talking about Scared of Fear. Aaron, you got to tie break this.
React Respond.
Completely. Oh,
Scared of Fear is easy. Scared of Fear is easy. You're going to nail the shit out of that song.
Well, now I feel like it's dope.
Yeah, it's just GMB. They'll figure that out. So it's fine.
Okay.
Randy, you forgot your coffee.
I mean, I won't react or respond to that.
These two songs are going back to like classic Pearl Jam, classic 1-2 punch,
right
from the get-go of a record. And that's why I'm super excited for this record because, like, you know, I said it before, I think this is like the second coming of 10 for them. I'm not comparing the two records, obviously, but I think it's with the same kind of maybe perspective. They get to redo it again.
It's amazing how much buzz they have gotten over media that they never captivated before.
Yeah.
One example, Rolling Stone. Rolling Stone has never been positive towards Pearl Jam, with a few exceptions. And now,
not since 96.
Now Rolling Stone wrote a pretty nice review of Dark Matter. And actually, to all Swifties out there, new Musical Express just titled the new album of Taylor Swift flat, repetitive, and boring. Gave him 3 stars. They gave 4.5 to Dark Matter.
And okay.
And the British dudes are quite conservative when it comes to music. Like, they support British bands a lot, but sometimes certain American acts are kind of hard to sell for them, because that's something that I've always noticed, even though they could be a great album. But like what Jason is saying, I think he has a point. I don't know if it's going to be the second coming of 10. I don't think that will never be repeated, but just such the positive reviews and the hype that they're getting for a band with this trajectory. It's just, it's kind of like intriguing, and I don't know. I really want to see where this goes.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen a couple odd things happen the last few months. I mean, all of a sudden, Creed's a big fucking deal again, which is just bizarre.
Not around here, it's not.
Nickelback has become a meme of themselves, and they're like coming out with a movie called Love or Hate or some crap. You know, we have
Pearl Jam album coming up the same day as it. They can't get in on it. No, that's not fun. That's no, thank you.
2024, bro.
Here's a weird time
in music right now. You know, Ghost, what's the other one? Sleep Token getting popular, like with mainstream kids. It's all confusing. So if Pearl Jam blows up in 2024, I'm here for it.
And I think they could, because like when we just went to, my wife and I just went to the theater the other day, and there was a girl behind the counter. She couldn't have been more than 20. And, you know, we had like Pearl Jam stuff on. She's like, oh, you guys are here for the Pearl Jam thing, huh? And we're like, yeah. She goes, I am so jealous. Like, I am so excited for this new record. And I was like, hell.
Hey guys, Kirk just posted the Metacritic review. Metacritic is also pretty hardcore on the reviews, and it's pretty good. If Metacritic says that.
This is going to put them back out on top for a bit.
Hey, can I jump in real quick? I took some notes when I was in the theater on these two songs specifically, because they were at the beginning of the album. So the second time through, I said that Scared of Fear is the most Pearl Jam song on the album. Like, if you listen to it. I
fully agree with that. It's the most original they have, yes.
Yeah. At the end, the riff is almost directly the same as the riff from Alone. When it goes dun, 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 dun. It's very...
Yeah.
All right. The thing is, when Eddie says laugh, he says it like he's British. He goes luff a number of times in the song, and I just found that as humorous. I think that on React Respond at the end, Stone channels a little bit of Tom Morello. He doesn't have the same, like, I mean, Javier could talk about the actual, like, hardware of it, but he doesn't have that same fuzz to it, but it's kind of a Tom Morello-ish riff to it. And then the Dolby Atmos mix that we had in the theater on React Respond, Mike's solo at the end, it's like a bee flying around the theater.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome. Yep. It was awesome. So I'm looking forward to the Dolby on that. And then I think that the one thing that Scared of Fear, that React Respond may suffer from is its album placement, because it seems to me it has the same kind of tempo and tone as the song before it, but it's not as good in my opinion. So I think it would have been better if it was separated from its kind of sibling, as it were.
Yeah, actually, what Mike was saying about the mix, that thank you for saying that, because that really, really caught my attention, because when he gets into that part where, like, you can see it, like, going side to side, and then it gets in your face again. That was a pretty cool mix detail, too.
That's actually what the stage setup's going to be, because during that part, Mike will be running around the stage like this.
So. Yeah. Well, remember that now the new thing, he has, like, a little corridor in the front. So that's where the confetti is going to be exploding. All the bracelets are going to be glowing, going to be jumping around. You know, they're going to play the same set every night. Now it's going to be only 18 songs. But, I mean, that's what it is, man.
The Zoo Europa Tour has finally come back to haunt them again. Anything further on React Respond, then I think we can kind of finalize this and wrap a bow on it.
Wanted to point out one lyric thing I thought was cool and Scared of Fear. Mm-hmm. Is that I looked up the lyrics and he mentions One Last Setting Sun.
Yes. Yep. I noticed that right away, even in the record store where I couldn't hear shit.
And I got a very Stones, maybe I was thinking of Andrew Watt with the Stones connection. I got kind of a Keith Richards tone feel to the beginning of Scared of Fear, which is kind of neat.
Yep.
And then React Respond, that like crazy laugh tackle thing he did. I don't know if you remember that. It's like 2/3 way through. It reminded me a lot of Joe Strummer in London Calling. Yep. I don't know if you guys caught that, but that two quick things that jumped out at me from classic rock.
Like it.
The same thing, lyrics on Scared of Fear are great. The you're hurting yourself. It's plain to see. I think you're hurting yourself just to hurt me is like grade A Ed Ved lyrics. And then even the end of the bridge is great. The stop the voices calling all around my head as if you never left is like haunting almost. It's like, ugh. Where this is going to place in openers is going to be interesting as time goes on. My first initial reaction to React Respond, I thought it could fit on Binaural. I don't know if that's like a hot take or, but it sounds like a Jeff song. So it kind of reminded me of God's Dice a little bit, but like that kind of setting and kind of pace around it. But yeah, they're both, I think they'll both do well live, obviously. But yeah, probably Scared of Fear is probably my top three on the album.
Yeah. It's hard to have an opener not work with this band. Mm-hmm. They know exactly what they're doing. They get it. They understand how they're introducing their music to people for the first time. There was a lot of conversation about React Respond that I want to bring up before we wrap it up. We did hear a lot of Police and Devo in there. So yeah, if you listen in your right ear, like right before they get into the chorus, you kind of hear this little like little boop, 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 the little like pattering almost,
and just like a chippy riff. Yeah,
that right there.
yeah
that's I was about to say Alex Lifeson, but I am wrong. I don't remember the guitarist for Police's name. I'm batting bang.
Stuart Copeland.
Nope, that's the drummer. That's
the drummer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's Miles. Jeez, why do I not know this?
Andy, oh, God, they're like...
There's only three of them in this room.
Andy Summers?
We can't. No. Andy Summers, thank you.
Mm-hmm. There it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it started with an A, right? Okay, so overall, this has been a positive experience for everybody in here.
Yeah.
The only negativity that I've seen is for somebody with the last name starting with the letter G rhyming with Pow. And it was before the record even came out, so I think he was lying about it. But I'll kind of leave that aside. I think that this is a classic example of what Pearl Jam should be doing. And honestly, that they were pushed to do this in this stage of the game, they could have, it's not like they took layups with the last couple of records, but they could have stayed within their comfort zone. Yeah. But the fact that they were forced out of it and forced into something that used to be familiar to them with more of the first three records style, maybe not sound, but energy and I guess flowing a little bit of pickup. Getting back to that, I think that's why these songs are going to work live, because I think that the idea of hearing this type of music is what you want out of the Pearl Jam experience. And while, yeah, I love a song like 7 o'clock Live. I think it's a great song. I think that a lot of songs off Gigaton really work. You know, I think Rivercross works. I think Retrograde works, and I think hopefully that's going to stick around. But like these, without a doubt, are going to have an impact very, very soon. Yeah.
The greatest outcome about this is, for some reason, I never want to say that they lost the drive, but I think they found a new focus, and now those guys are excited again. Mm-hmm. Like I haven't. I'm trying to remember this, but they have been talking about like getting back to the studio as soon as they can. That's like, yeah, that's how excited they are. You know, like I think, and I said this, and I'm going to say this again. This is a love letter by a fan for the fans.
Absolutely.
And I stand by that. Yep, and right. I stand by that, because push them to do whatever they do best. It's a great record, and also got them excited to do new stuff, or maybe to go back to old ways that they thought that they couldn't do anymore. And they sound fresh. They sound reinvigorated. They're almost pushing 60. That sounds fucking awesome. And everybody's playing at the top of the game. You can't ask for more. You just can't ask for more.
So Javi, that's a question I thought of earlier. I wanted to throw out to you specifically, especially with how you've been talking about Watt and stuff like that. So if you go back to, do you recall where you were exactly 1 year ago this weekend?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What Mike was saying to you face to face with his excitement, bring that full circle to the outcome.
I remember what it was. I'm signing this for Randy because he can't be here.
That happened too. Well,
yeah, actually, while I was doing that, when I was talking to Mike, and actually I have a funny story to tell you guys after this story, because my wife is so excited about Record Store Day, and I'm like, I love you with all my heart. Do you realize that nothing can beat what happened last year? Just letting you know. But when Aaron and I were waiting in line, I had the opportunity to meet Mike, my guitar hero, talk to him, and we have this moment where he was just like completely light up and excited. Like, yeah, we're making a new record. And immediately the tone of the conversation changed, and I'm like, he's telling me something that maybe, I don't know, you know? And then he started to dig a little deeper about that, but it's just, like Aaron was saying, you're listening, that you're like kind of checking the timeline. It was right after they got done with the second session on Rick Rubin's place. Mm-hmm. So now they had a direction, they know where to go, and now, like Aaron was saying, it's full circle.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact phrase he used, but he said something about, I think we're starting to wrap things up, like we're almost done.
Yep,
and, he said, and like, yeah, like, particularly to you, like, he went into, like, his face, he looked like a kid in a candy store. He's just like, yeah, it's gonna, you know, it's just like, yeah. So just thinking about everything that's come out since then, and that's where we got more and more and more info about Watt and everything. It's like,
yeah,
to now have it come to life, and it is on the level that he was saying. You know, every band ever says that their next record's great, right? Most of them are.
Yeah.
So,
and I think it takes a really big leap of faith just to work with guys that, like, they have their own process, they have their own system, they know what works for them. But let's not forget the fact that these guys went to a studio, they have never been there before. They didn't take any instruments with them at all. And they were inspired by a collector, because what is a collector? He has a bunch of vintage crap and very expensive amps and all that stuff. And they just basically grabbed whatever they had in front of them, and they kept pushed to play very, very, very loud.
Yeah.
And they
went back to the basics when they first started out as musicians and, you know, forming a band. You know, they didn't have stuff. They just got in a room and started creating.
Yeah.
That's why don't see any, this is a Jeff song, this is an Ed song, this is a Stone song. It's because they all collaborated and all brought something to the table on it. Stone has a riff. Okay, let's follow this lead. Let's see where we can go from here. Matt has something. Matt has an intro. Okay, what works? Figure it out. And I have to go back to Verses and Vitalogy, because although there was a distinct, okay, this guy brought these songs to the table here, everybody shared credits. Everybody shared credits. And there is no individual credits on this record at all. Everybody is credited on everything. So,
and it's still, yeah. And it's still in an interview, he said that whatever it was being taken home, it was discarded. Ed reworked some of the lyrics for a few tracks. Dark Matter was processed because they recorded Matt doing the drum loop at the beginning, so they wanted to get the song right. But everything else, that it was kind of like, this didn't work. And they were like, we're just going to take it home. And we were, no, discarded. And then we'll start to play again some other stuff.
I think that
approach is fucking badass, if you ask me. Like, honestly, and you can hear it on the record. There's a sense of urgency. There's a sense of excitement. You can hear that. Mm-hmm. And what captured all that?
It builds some trust, too.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, how you earn that. Like, it's, you know, like, these guys went there and they're like, all right, we're going to let us... I mean, would it basically allow you to lead us, use a complete different system. They didn't record on tape.
Yeah.
It went straight to the computer. That's different.
Yeah.
You know? So, I don't know. I'm just excited. I'm super excited.
All right. Well, it feels like the first time that we're going to hear some things will be very, very soon on Monday. When they make an appearance on Howard Stern, it feels like they're going to play one or two songs, so at least we'll get the feel of that. But the first time that we're going to get an actual crowd will be on May the 4th. May the 4th be with you and Vancouver. And then all throughout May, we'll be talking about it. We'll be reacting to it, reacting and responding to it. Sorry, I'm going to make that joke about a billion times this year, and I'll give two shits. Anybody that rolls their eyes, because it's going to be on
potatoes.
Potato, it's going to be on every fucking episode. Swear to God. I'm going to make it one of those catchphrases I put in to every episode that I do. So, yeah, the reaction episodes that are going to happen over on Patreon, if you want to join on Patreon, patreon.com/liveonfourlegs. I do want to thank Ned, who's in here, who joined on Patreon today. So thank you, Ned. That was awesome. Welcome aboard. You get bootlegs. Thanks. So if you do want to join patreon.com/liveonfourlegs and just join up for the dollar tier and you will get all of the instant reaction episodes, which we are hoping to be great this year, all coming from site, and we're going to try to make a big thing of it. So get ready. It is full go right now. It's full go in all of this dark matter. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you very, very soon.